Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hi, Susie. Hi, groomers. We're here.
Welcome to episode 162 of the Groom Pod, recorded on April 29th, 2018 in Snohomish, Washington and Tucson, Arizona. This episode of the Groom Pod is sponsored by Stazco Products, featuring the famous Stazco Conditioning Spray. Find them online and at your favorite distributors like Ryan's Pet Supplies. This week on the Groom Pod, we're going to talk feet. We are going to learn about irritation versus allergic reaction. And there's an Ask Barbara question from our Facebook discussion group. To find that group, you can go to facebook.com/group/thegroompod. Subscribe to the Groom Pod on Stitcher, on iTunes, on Google Play, wherever. Find all things Groom Pod related at our website, www.thegroompod.com, including our donation button, the Amazon banner, and the Patreon button. So thank you guys for sharing us with your grooming buddies, because we have crested the 3,500 range on the Facebook page. Woohoo!
Wow!
Yeah, pretty amazing. And remember to support and thank our sponsors, Best Shot, South Park, Evolution, Stazco, and Amazon. What's new this week? Brought to you by Barbara's Shopping Site. Shop for specialty grooming items at www.shop.beaver.biz. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma. Barbara, how was your week?
You know, I just had a nice week.
I like that. Say,
yeah, it was nice. I had three new customers. I had a new customer every day I groomed this week.
Wow.
And, yeah. And now I'm forgetting what the first one was, but the second one was a Yorkie. And this was funny. This is a woman who moved from New York, and she's, I remember what the first one was. It was a hand strip border terrier.
Oh, yay.
And that guy had moved from New York, and he, get this, Susie, he's a professional photographer, and he's going to help me.
Oh, wow. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, yeah. He's going to help me, and he already gave me some hints. And I'm going to trade him hand stripping because, you know, it's a costly grooming. Yeah. So I'm going to trade him a little, and you know, he's going to help me get some video stuff going. Then the second one was the lady from New York with the Yorkie, and she said she can't find a groomer who does a Yorkie style. Well, I didn't know what that meant at all. But when I got a hold of her Yorkie, apparently it meant everybody's just doing a puppy cut.
A Susie cut.
Yeah, a puppy cut and
one length all over, no shaping, no adjusting, no style.
Yeah, no style.
Yeah, no spunk, no pizzazz, none of that Barbara stuff.
Yeah, none of that Barbara stuff. And I said, oh, I'm so glad you found me. And so I did number 7 on the back, and I left the kind of skirt and the legs, which were, and then I did a cute head. And we may grow the head even longer, or we may do it shorter. But now she's got style, and we decided together. See, nobody had ever done a styling consultation with her.
That makes a big difference.
It's huge. It's huge. It's huge. I learned this from my own hairdresser. You know, I've been going to Meredith for 45 years. Okay, since before I opened my shop, and every single time I go, we have a consultation before she gets going about what we're going to do today. And sometimes it's long and sometimes it's short. It just depends on if we're making changes or doing color or, you know, whatever. And so that you together you form the what you might call the styling agreement.
I have clients that encourage that. They just, it's, I didn't know, well, see, because I've never really been to a hairdresser, maybe a handful of times in my life, mostly for my nails, not my hair. I didn't realize that conversation happened. But this is interesting that now that you say that, the people that I have that conversation with are former hairdressers mostly, who every time I go, I've cut their dog for 14 years. We rediscuss how we're going to cut the dog the same way each month.
Well,
but I bet that's where it's from.
That's where it's from. I mean, hairdressers are taught to do this, and it's a very important part of the service. And groomers tend to either oversimplify it or make the client make every single styling decision.
Or you not know? Even get the chance to be up there when the dog comes in, which is even more challenging.
Or, yeah, have a third party.
Yes.
Yeah, that can be hard. So that's one of the things about my service is that, you know, I'm willing to do that. So I didn't have any pictures for her, but we talked about a top knot. We talked about this and that. And I happen to have Callie, the little Yorkie that Yvonne is rehoming. And she and I had just done her back. So, you know, there she was as a model of what I was talking about, which was pretty good.
And that video, by the way, you guys, that video of Callie is available on our Patreon account. If you donate a little bit each month, you can access that video. Anyway, continue.
So, very good. Good point. So we did him with a top knot and a Callie groom and almost a Westie head, but she wasn't ready to actually go there. And she loved it. We put a bow in his top knot and she said, oh, he looks like a prince. She was just dancing when she got her dog back because it had style.
Yes.
You know, it had something that could be called a style. You know, she took a bunch of my cards. She couldn't wait to take her dog to the neighborhood and show him off. So that was funny. And then I had a new dog that was a Sheltie.
One of my favorite.
Yeah. This dog was so Milo. It was 11-year-old Sheltie in a really full coat. She wanted a de-shedding and just do nice teddy bear feet. She didn't want cat paw feet, but we'll get there in another segment, right? She
yes,
wanted teddy bear feet, and I just trimmed the feet up real nice with the blenders, and she loved it, and she's going to be a returning client. So I just had three new clients, three successes. And that helps to put a shine on the whole operation, right?
Yes, totally. What did you use for de-shedding that Sheltie?
That it didn't really work. I used the new conditioner that I bought as a substitute for the Cure Care that we used to use,
right?
And it didn't loosen the hair. I'm telling you, we had to comb through the whole dog, and it didn't blow out. And so I probably won't buy that conditioner again, even though I thought I was going to really like it. It just didn't do that job. And the de-shedding was one of the things that the Cure Care could be counted on.
Well, darn.
So Yvonne said she used a lot of it. So the coat didn't, you know, like it could be that he's not really blowing coat yet. That's what I explained to her. He didn't seem to really be ready to release a lot of coat. And but I think that for next time, I'm going to buy some 16-ounce bottles of the Bet Shot system. It was a disappointment, but we did get a lot of hair out and the coat could breathe and, you know, the dog is just suffering a little bit because he's moved directly from, you know, wherever, Wisconsin. That dog came from like Wisconsin to here. He's moved from cold country to a hot spot. And
yeah, they don't adjust to that all that well sometimes.
It takes a while.
Yep. To really climatize or acclimatize. Yeah. I'm not sure which is correct on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I finally got brave enough after last week's conversation with you to put a video up, although it's not a grooming video. But what I did put up is how I wrap my hands every day.
And oh, good. That's important.
It is important. And I did it to kind of break the ice of me seeing myself on video, because mostly the video that we did was you, and I'm not in there. And I didn't know how I would like me on video. It turns out I like me on video a lot.
Oh, I'm sure you have no problem. Yeah.
Oh my, maybe a little too much.
Well, that's how I am when I lose weight. I get very vain when I lose weight. I look at myself a lot. I like it. You know, I buy clothes for it. I dress it up. I put it together. I do all of that. But when I'm fat,
yeah. Well, I thought, what a delightful time to put on my Groom Pod shirt, and then proceeded not to put it on. So I'm wearing one of my nice tie-dyes. I'm actually wearing the tie-dye that matches my car. So it's a good one. It's similar to the one I'm wearing here today. But anyway, so I did. I took the video and I explained how I vet wrap my hands for basal joint arthritis. And I got the information from my hand specialist, who then gave me to his physical therapist. The one thing that I didn't put on the video, and I didn't realize it until like hours later, and I'll probably try to go in and at least put in a line of text and then re-download it, was that when you're wrapping your hands, you need to hold your hands like you're holding a coffee cup when you wrap. And I never mentioned that. I just automatically do it, but I didn't point it out. So if you guys have watched the video, or you're curious and you go to watch the video, keep in mind your hand when you're wrapping it is supposed to be in the shape of holding a coffee cup. So I felt silly, but it turns out that I do okay on video. I didn't look awful. I didn't have too many waddles. It wasn't too wrinkly. It all kind of worked out. I felt okay about it. So that's up there.
Well, you probably got 5 or 10 years of looking good left.
Oh, good.
And then you'll have to review your criteria.
It was
go from looking good to good enough.
Good enough.
So, you know, like, speaking of wrapping, I have just become aware of that you can go on Amazon and buy the tape that the physical therapists use when they tape your joints for protection. Yeah. You mean that, you know, the KT tape it's what I'm seeing on TV that had me then going to look, because I think that that's what I need to do for my bad knee for when I work, better than trying to wear a knee brace that either rolls and cuts off your circulation or doesn't do enough.
Here's the thing about that.
Mm-hmm.
It works well, but it destroys the surface of your skin. It's good for like short term, but you need to get a barrier for like sports medicine. They have a barrier that you can put on your skin so that taping it and leaving it on there repeatedly doesn't make huge sores underneath there. Because even I used to tape my ankles every day till I got these new ankle braces from Amazon. And I would have sores. I'd have to put Band-Aids over them so that I wouldn't rip it off when I ripped off the tape. But other than that, tape is a great way to go. It's really supportive. It really does a great job. You can go onto YouTube and Google your specific knee issue, and they will show you how to KT tape.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what kind of tied the deal, that I saw that I could go to YouTube. And I remember how my physical therapist did it. You know,
perfect.
They kind of do a diamond shaped thing, but. I'm glad to know that there's YouTube assistance, because I'm going to give it a try and see if I can just support my knees better.
Yeah, when you use YouTube for this type of stuff, you will run across a lot of people who speak with difficult accents to understand. So just go to another video that looks similar and listen for something that you can understand or get one with the words, because some of them are hard to understand. They all have the basic taping there, really easy to understand though, that part of it. So the visual is good, but it'll tell you where it needs to be tight or loose, where you should just lay it on your skin and where you might need to pull a little tighter. So look for that stuff. But I have a minor in athletic training, and then all that, I learned all the taping you could possibly want. So I fall back on taping quite often, which is why I wrap my hands. It's better than trying to have surgery or something like that. If I can wrap it, and they don't do really good wrist and hand and thumb replacements and things like that, which is probably, yeah, I'm not going there. I'll just tape it in place. That works for me. So we have a new Patreon account person, Patreon.
Oh, good. Who is it?
Hey, you guys. We need a name for the Patreon people. You know, if you do any Patreon accounts for anybody else, they all have really cute names. Like, you know, the people who followed Lady Gaga were called the Monsters, and the people who follow Jimmy Buffett are the Parrot Heads. We need a really cool name for our followers on Patreon. And our newest follower is Amy Hedren. So thank you, Amy.
Thanks, Amy. We so appreciate your contributions.
We sure do. Let's take a quick break, Barbara, and hear from Best Shot, and then we're going to discuss feet.
Okay.
We've all been there. Your appointment shows up, and it's a matted mess. The products you choose can make a huge difference in the end result. The Ultramax line by Best Shot is the perfect solution. It was engineered for serious professionals to get dirty jobs done right. The Ultramax system starts with the shampoos. Ultramax Pro is a dilute as needed shampoo. Use it directly on the coat for degreasing, dilute it 50-1 for deep cleaning, 15-1 for light cleaning, or anything in between. This makes it perfect for recirculating bathing systems. And there's Ultramax Clarifying Shampoo too. Ultramax Pro Conditioner is so light, but so powerful. It has Best Shot special coat-releasing technology for superior de-shedding and de-matting. It never adds drying time and works great in recirculators, too. And a body splash. The whole Ultramax line features a modern sweet pea fragrance. This isn't your grandma's perfume. It's delightful. Whether it's Ultramax, One Shot, Ultra Wash, or any of the Best Shot lineup, you can expect the finest quality and true performance. They will help you make masterpieces out of nightmares in record time. Find Best Shot products at quality distributors and online at bestshotpet.com. Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. First appointment time, Barbara. Let's talk all about feet. I got to thinking about feet because I was using those. We got a cool little trimmer from someone who's trying to market their trimmer. Barbara and I both got to test it out. And I've been using that little trimmer on pads way more than I've been grabbing my big clippers with the clipper back, because I'm trying to correct my pointy toe issue. And while I was doing that, I thought, hey, this is a great topic. Let's talk about feet. What do you think? Let's talk about feet.
Sure.
Okay. I have all this time been taking your words to heart of starting with the feet for doing the legs, because the feet is the base of your grooming, right? Explain a little bit that theory for me.
Well, and I want everybody to know that this is just me. Not everybody agrees with this, but what I see that goes wrong with many beginning groomers, and even groomers that have been doing it for a while, is the feet are done. Am I frozen?
No, I'm just laughing because this is exactly what I do. You're talking about me and I'm what, 18, 20 years in? I'm still doing it?
Well, yeah. So like people do the feet last, or maybe just before they do the tail. So what happens when you do that is that sometimes the feet don't match up with the legs very well, but they either look like, they either come out too short, or they come out not the right shape for the style. And I just believe in kind of getting that knocked out first, because the feet are the foundation of the whole object that you're working on, your whole work of art, which is the dog and then the profile. So
I'm champion of the world of getting the wrong foot on the right leg or the right foot on the wrong leg. If I look at my feet, they look great by themselves, but they don't attach to the leg very well. If I look at my leg, it looks spectacular, but the foot looks awful. So you've just gotten to a T.
So that's what happens. That's the risk of doing the feet as kind of an afterthought and giving all of your attention and your energy to getting the column legs and getting the head right and whatever else you're doing. And the feet are done at the last, you're running out of time kind of moment, right? And you just take it for granted. It's just the feet.
Yes. Then nobody pays attention to the feet.
No, I know. And even in show dog pictures in the show dog magazines, they have the feet in the grass. So we don't see them, you know?
Yeah.
But if you go to the dog show, there's a couple of things that you'll notice. First of all, you'll notice that you see every single asshole on every dog.
Yeah, testicles too.
Testicles and assholes. They are not covered up. They are boldly displayed, you know. And then you'll notice that the feet are precisely groomed on every single dog.
Yeah.
And that goes for keeping the nails down. Of course, they go to a little bit of an extreme at dog shows for keeping the nails short. I think it sometimes reaches a point of a little too much harmful, little too short. But anyway, that's another thing. But you'll notice that the feet are gorgeous. And
as groomers, especially groomers on Facebook, we love foot porn.
We love foot porn. And this was kind of brought home. The importance of the foot was brought home to me yesterday with the new dog, the Sheltie.
Really?
It was one of the things in our pre-groom consultation that she said was really important to her, is that she wanted round teddy bear feet. I didn't argue with her. I would say, look, your dog's supposed to have cat paw feet, not teddy bear feet, but who's going to split that difference? I knew what she meant when she pointed to her dog's feet, when she showed me what she liked, and I gave that back to her. And I did the feet first. And when I do my Bichons, I always do the foot first to set the length. Because the length on the feet and on the area that's where the leg attaches, the front of the leg attaches to the foot, that's really important.
Yeah.
You notice sometimes you take that all off and sometimes you leave it to flow into the foot. You know, like that's a little place that we never talk about.
The wrist.
Yeah. How to do the wrist. We might do that. We might talk about that again. But, the difference for me, the difference between a cat paw and a teddy bear paw is whether or not you comb up the between the toes and cut that off. On a cat paw, you're going to comb up everything that's between the toes on the top of the foot, and you're going to use your blenders and cut that off. So you're going to see little indentations
toes.
Between the toes. Yeah. But on a teddy bear foot, it's going to be really kind of a biscuit foot. It's going to be kind of round and smooth, and then a nice edge around the front and sides.
Yeah, toes disappearing and blending into the foot instead of separating out as a toe.
Yeah. And you really do need to take your nails down short before you try to do your teddy bear foot, because the nails being too long, it screws you up.
Well, Yes, and or I save the nails for last because then I have a little hair left over to correct my shitty
I know, and
Yeah, I'm just being
well,
honest.
I mean, and when I have a new dog, I never do the nails first on the new dog.
Right.
I'm with you. I do the nails after I've established my relationship with the dog, and the dog trusts me.
Yep.
You know, like I'm just not going to go over to a brand new Scotty and say, "Oh, hi, I'm your groomer. Trust me. Let's do your nails."
Let's start with your front foot. The one that doesn't bend at all. Yeah, no,
Yeah.
interesting. Yeah.
So, you know, there's exceptions to every single rule.
Yep. Yeah,
Oh,
that's
you
just
know,
one of my.
amen, you
Yeah,
know,
I'm
yeah.
learning. One thing that I've always done since day one, because I learned to groom with a clipper vac. I mean, I started with a clipper vac. I've never, maybe a little bit in school, I groomed without a clipper vac. And then I started with the clipper vac as soon as I went off on my own, and I've never looked back. So when I scoop pads out, I say scoop, but when I level pads out, I do it with a 40 blade. Part of what I was doing that was making it more challenging to get my feet correct was I was taking underneath the toes off instead of just kind of going from the pads back and then scissoring the front part of the toes. So if I leave the nails and I take from the pads back and leave the hair off the front of the feet, it's correcting my bad feet a little bit. But if I start out by doing Now, if I started out by shaping the leg and then doing the foot last, it would look awful. I really appreciate that tip from you. That has helped me quite a bit, even though, you know, I'm still not there yet. I am working that direction.
Well, we all are working in that direction, Susie. You know, like I don't think there's anybody that's there yet except maybe Lindsay Dickin.
Yeah, okay. So what do you do with pads? How do you do pads?
I do pads with cordless trimmer on the 40 blade setting, and sometimes I scoop to get every little thing out between the pads, and sometimes I level off. If I don't think it's matted underneath there, and let's face it, sometimes when you're working with older dogs like Dave the Cocker Spaniel, he's got very little tolerance for having his one paw lifted up anyway, because
Yeah.
he's you know he's really old. And I just do good just to make sure there's no hair on the pads.
Here's another reason I'll scoop. When I know that the dog has a difficult time with flooring in the house, then I will scoop the pads to give a little bit of extra time before the hair then grows over the pads and they lose their ability to stick on the floor again. You know, the dogs that you see in the house, they walk from rug to rug to rug, from area rug to rug.
Oh, I know. You know, like pet owners can be so unaware of what the dog goes through on their new hardwood floors or whatever. I remember I had someone with a 17-year-old dog, and they got new flooring in there. They ripped out their carpeting and they got new flooring in there. And I just wanted to cry for the dog. And so, sure enough, the dog started splaying out front
Yep.
and back, you know. And I'm saying, you know what? That dog was counting on that carpeting. You should have, you know, like they could have waited 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah. If you point it out, well, see, that's where being in somebody's house makes a big difference because I can point that out. I can point out the dog not wanting to come all the way to the door because there's no runner. All it takes is going to Costco or to Home Depot
Yeah,
or
you
to
can get, I got
Figure and get
runner.
runners.
I got that going when Arturo the Borzoi started having no traction,
And
even
to,
before I knew what was going on. You
yeah, and
know,
get the
I.
hair off to scoop the pads out just gives them a little more time, you know, just a little extra longer before that hair gets difficult to manage again for the dogs. Do you trim off the heel hair with the trimmer?
Pretty much so on pets. You know, I pretty much.
Do you go up the heel at all?
Only if it's a dog that I'm doing really short feet by request or by need for the pet. But, you know, like if I'm doing Bichon foot, I just go up like a quarter of an inch or just up the backside of the pad, but not up the whole, not all the way to that other thing that sticks out, whatever. What's the name of that?
The hawk?
But on the front.
No, down below. I don't know what the name of that is.
I don't know. We'll have to find that out.
Yes, that bone. Well,
That knobby thing. I mean, it's a pad, like.
Yeah.
You know, what is it? What the heck is that? I'm embarrassed, but we both are. So
yeah, I'll be editing that out. Don't worry. I don't want us to look bad.
God. Well, we don't know everything all the time.
That's true.
You know, I know. You know, like Yvonne asked me, I've been drinking this alkaline water. It's called Smart Water.
Yeah.
Because I like the taste.
Yeah.
So we fool around with that. So Yvonne says, well, if I drink a lot of this water, will I get smart like you? or she gives me a bottle of Smart Water, and then she says, can I ask you questions about the universe? You know, like, okay, well, some physics question or something. Speaking of physics, you know, I told you that I got that very expensive $29 PDF article.
Yes.
It is so interesting. But one of the things that came up in that article was that shampoo chemistry is so abstract that you actually get into physics.
Really?
Yeah. So when you get into the energy and, you know, like how dirt sticks to the dog, and I mean, it's all energy. Remember I told you it's all about the force?
Right.
Where's the force? The ionic force? Well, ionic force is just one kind of force that connects the shampoo and the hair.
There's more than that?
Yeah. Do you know what van der Waals force is?
No.
Van der Waals force is the weakest of the forces. And it's the kind of force that allows the gecko to walk up the wall.
Oh, that's why it's familiar.
Just call it the gecko force and you will always remember what the van der Waals force is. It's the weakest of the forces. You know, gravity is the strongest.
Sure.
Van der Waals force is the weakest. Ionic force is somewhere in there. We'll get into this some more. And I've known this for this last year as I dug deeper and deeper and began. You see, I only dig as deep as I can understand. And if I can't understand it, I just kind of skim it so I don't totally get mind boggled. I just wait and read on until I can grab hold of something with my mind. Well, now I'm beginning to be able to grab hold of some of this physics stuff. And it's amazing, but physics is almost as important to the action of shampoos as is chemistry.
Who knew that? I smell another book.
I know. I can't wait to redo my Understanding Shampoos webinar. And I can't wait to redo my coat damage webinar. I've learned so much more to put into the coat damage webinar.
We should do that Understanding Shampoo thing again here one of these months.
Yeah, I think we should do that too.
So let's talk about doing clean feet. I don't do clean feet anymore.
I do clean feet. It's become hard for me.
I take it back.
Because you do some clean feet?
Yeah, they're just not poodles. I don't do any poodles. But I have to do
What kind of a groomer are you? You don't do any poodles.
I did that on purpose.
Come on. Grooming is poodles.
Yeah, I do a lot of Bichons. I don't do any poodles. I just don't do poodles. You know, I would do little poodles, but I definitely don't want to do big poodles.
I don't do big poodles, but I still do clean feet. But it's a problem for me because of my hands. And I'm sure it is for you because of your hands, too. But I get, even doing toenails, I have a terrible time. It's one of those things that triggers my trigger finger.
Yeah.
Trigger thumb is one thing. I had trigger thumb happens to me almost every day a few times. But I had my forefinger curl around and get stuck yesterday. And my thumb got stuck against my palm. So I had this thing going.
Did you have to have Yvonne?
Yeah, Yvonne comes and she pulls things back and she massages a little at the basal joint, and I continue. You know,
we do what we have to. I always use my clipper vac when I'm doing poodle feet. When I used to do poodle feet, or when I'm doing poodle feet on the Shih Tzu,
I never ever was able to do nice poodle feet with a goddamn clipper vac. It's so big.
Well, I think that the connection makes a difference. I do it with the hand V connection, the easiest one of all of them to do poodle feet with. My Romani connection, not nearly as easy to get the poodle feet done because where the head sits on the top of the clipper, the hand V one, I just slide it way back. And then I've just got all access with the front of the clipper and it still sucks. I can't do poodle feet without the damn clipper back because then I get hairs left over. You know, I love that suction for poodle feet because it just gets all the hair right out of the way. One swipe across the top of the foot and 3/4 of the hair is gone right there. And then you just go up the toes. But you know, I don't like doing it. I only do it on this one Shih Tzu because it's an owner request kind of a thing. Here's another thing about pads. Pads are a place where lots of yeast infections and stuff like that happen. Lots of redness, lots of irritation here in the Northwest. I think scooping pads is bad when you've got a yucky cocker foot. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it, because I think you can very easily cause, I even had this happen with Maccabee, the South Dakota Wheaton Terrier. He came in and he had a big clump up underneath there, and I got it out, and then for days he licked his feet.
Yes.
And it was, you know, and
and it creates its own problem when they start licking their feet like that.
So if it's at all red or irritated, I hesitate to do it unless the owner has requested it and both on board. But I hear what you're saying. I use a mini trimmer to do my feet, and sometimes a mini. If it's a little poodle, I use the tiniest, you know, a little mini clipper, and then I can be very accurate, and I like to be a nice clean line, and you know, I get a little detail conscious when I do those clean feet.
Well, they're so exposed.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than coming back to a house 4 weeks later and seeing this hair sticking up between the dog's toes on a clean foot. Like, crap, couldn't they have cut that thing off? Has that been there for 4 weeks? Sticking it like this little wick that somehow you missed. I hate that. Drives me crazy.
I know. So you know what? We hate it when they don't do something, and we hate it when they do something. So
I like it when they struggle at trying to cut the hair off and do a horrible job, because it makes them appreciate me ever that much more. Did you ever do the time yourself on clean feet thing?
Oh, yeah. I went through that. You know, I think it's a very good exercise for every groomer to do, to try to find your best time. And, of course, the thing to surpass is 4 feet in 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's fast.
I'm more like 4 feet in 10 minutes.
Me too. Especially these days.
But, you know, I did that. I timed myself during a period of time when I was working alone and I really had to get up and go. I said, okay, let's see how long it has to take. Yeah. Let's see what's my best time here. It's a game to play with yourself, and certainly being able to do feet quickly and accurately, because you don't want to spend 15, 20 minutes doing freaking clean feet on a dog. And by the way, it's actually worth more when you do that. Clean feet should be a $5 surcharge, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree with that. When you're doing the bottom of a foot, when you're doing, like, let's say, a drop-coated foot, do you leave the foot on the ground and scissor around the dog's foot while it's on the table? Do you pick the dog's foot up and round the bottom of the foot? Or do you do a combination of both?
I do a combination of both. I it depends on the dog, and it depends on my end result. If it's a dog that I'm leaving in a fairly full coat, I will do it on the table. If it's a pretty short cut, I don't know what size the blue comb attachment is, about a four blade kind of thing, I will do it from the back. And one of the things that I learned during my certification was that you don't want any hair really touching the table.
Right.
So when you do your pads, it's good to do a little bit up on the edge of the foot around, just so that you've got a clean surface totally when they're standing. So sometimes I do a quick way on the front, well, on both feet. I comb everything down with my comb, hold it like I was going to bevel a poodle foot. And I hold it, I pick the foot up, and I'm holding all the hair. And then I go in with my 40 blade trimmer, and I get it all the way around. And I just trim that with the clipper around, put the foot down, and then fix it from the table view.
That's a way I do it a lot. Another way I do it is I have a lot of bent handle shears, and I have bent handle straights that are very small, and I can just leave the foot down. I'll pick up the other foot with dogs that are able to, so the dog holds still. And then I'll take my bent shank straights just flat against the ground, and I'll just kind of round up that foot. Sometimes when I pick the foot up and try to do it, then I end up with the pointy toe too short on the edges. That's just me, though. But there's plenty of people who pick that foot up and just make a beautiful bevel, which leads into another topic, and that's beveling feet. And which breeds do you bevel feet on? I know Cockers.
But you see, you bevel not only the feet, but you also bevel the bottom of the legs on the Cockers. I mean, the bevels on the Cockers are totally awesome.
Yeah, they're neat.
Hard to do. That's grooming porn for me. Beautiful beveled Cocker legs.
Yeah.
I just drool over that. But there again, the secret to beveling is to comb it all down together and scissor it and let it go, and it will have a little gradation of length there. Of course, the bottom of poodle legs between the clean foot, there's another place that you might want a little beveling, depending on the length of the legs again. Okay, another place where I'm beveling is on my bearded collie.
When the legs are full like that.
The legs are full, the feet are full, I'm giving her nice little teddy bear feet, and then beveling the long hair around the bottoms of the feet there.
In that case, it's definitely a cleaner for the owners if you can do that.
Yeah, it can be cleaner for the owners. Where else?
Hey, how about terrier feet? Always comes to mind. Tight feet, tight little terrier feet.
Tight, but not clean feet.
Right.
So you know, there's an angle. Terrier feet are angled back towards the body at about a 45 degree angle.
Like that's moving.
Yeah, that's what I've been taught, but you definitely want it to be tight. And for doing that, I usually work with the foot on the table, and then I take my little curved shears and I just go up and down around the edge, top edge of the foot in the front.
Like with them pointed down?
Pointed down.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, like I shape them with the blade going around the foot, but I angle them back by holding my scissors at a 45-degree angle and just going around the toes like that. And that'll give you that little terrier-like foot.
Up on their foot.
Yeah, yeah.
So one more weird foot that I always like to talk about when I'm talking about feet, which is not very often. I don't know why. Like, oh yeah, I go in and I hang out at the, you know, sandwich shop and we talk about dog feet. It does not happen. I swear it doesn't. The slipper foot, the classic slipper foot. Anytime you talk about feet, you got to talk about the King Charles Spaniel feet and what do the owners want and what don't they want and what's a slipper foot. And tell us about the slipper foot.
Well, the slipper foot is definitely a feature of the breed profile of the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And it's something that most groomers don't recognize. Most groomers look at that foot and they want to trim it into a cat foot or a teddy bear foot.
It's like somebody says, don't push the red button, and your finger just goes to the red button, and you have to push the red button. It's like that. I want to cut the hair off those feet so badly. Oh.
But if the people want a slipper foot, you can still do a lot on the underside of the foot. They just want a fuller foot, and it does not have to be never trim it.
Yeah, not for pet owners. They want it, you know, tidied up a little bit. Usually.
Yeah, you tidy it up a little bit with your blenders.
That's where you've got to communicate, though, where we circle all the way back to what we were talking about before, about that consultation. You've got to find out through conversation with the owner what they want done on that foot.
Yeah, because you don't know what they know.
True.
And you don't know what they don't know. And the only way you can get to that is to be specific. So if they say, can you groom a King Charles Spaniel? You can't assume that they know about the slipper foot or that they like it. So that's something you really need to address specifically when you get in a Cavalier.
Let's take a break. I think we've
exhausted that subject.
I think I was trying to come up with a better pun about feet, but I just can't. So I've drawn a blank. So let's go hear from South Park Professional Pet Products about their foaming face wash. And
which I love.
Yes, it smells so good. Oh my gosh. And then we're coming back to school. Groomers, we all know that the first thing doggy moms and dads do when they pick up their beautifully coiffed babies from us is they go in for a cuddle, right? That first cuddle is so important because it gives them the opportunity to really enjoy their freshly groomed and sweet-smelling pups. Well, our friends over at South Park Professional Pet Products have a new item that's sure to bring a smile to all of those pet parents and groomers, too. South Park, as you know, is the originator of the now famous South Park's Blueberry Facial. They are located in sunny San Diego, California, where founders Lisa Vella and Donna Walker, also known as the Blueberry Girls, operate a dog wash and consumer pet store, as well as a wholesale distribution center. These amazing ladies have come up with an entirely new product that really has us here at the Groom Pod excited. It's a foaming cleanser with a fabulous new fragrance. It smells like blueberries and coconut, two of my personal favorite smells. I can't wait to try it. It's good for slobber mouth, goober eyes, and strategic stinkiness. The real neat thing is that you don't have to rinse it out. And to top it off, it's a foam, so it's extra safe for using around the eyes. You know how much Barbara and I love foam for faces. South Park's Blueberry Coconut Pet Foam comes in a generous 8.5-ounce foamer and is safe for use on dogs, cats, puppies, and kittens. This is sure to be a favorite in shops as a retail item or in the bathing room for pre-washing faces and loosening those eye boogies. If you would like more information or to place an order, you can go to the website www.southbarkprofessionalpet.com or you can call them at 1-877-232-2235. And remember to look for the Blueberry Girls and their products at many of our grooming trade shows and seminars. Our hands are money makers. We rely on them. How long we last in this career is dependent on how well we care for our hands. Evolution shears were engineered to be the most ergonomic shears out there. They were designed by a team of groomers, sharpeners, and medical professionals with comfort in mind. They started with the observation that all hands were not created equal. In fact, they're all unique and have different needs. Evolution shears are fully customizable with adjustable sizing and your choice of fixed ring, single, or double swivels. I recommend the double swivels. They're my personal favorites. Evolution shears works with your thumb in its natural position, making scissoring in all directions a pleasure. They're made to prevent repetitive stress injuries that occur due to scissoring and keep you from grooming. They use high-quality materials but are very affordable. They come in curves, straights, thinners, and chunkers, and in a variety of lengths and edges. A good thing for those of us with scissor addictions. There is a learning curve, but don't worry. The staff at Evolution will hold your hand through the whole process. Their customer service is tip-top. You can put your hands on a pair of Evolution shears and say hi to Abby, Ron, and our favorite salesperson, Chris Anthony, at many of the grooming shows. But if you're in a hurry, and you should be, go online to evolutionshears.com or call them at 877-560-3057 and buy yourself a pair or two. Be sure to ask for Chris, and she will take great care of you. But wait! If you act now... Well... Okay, you don't have to act right now, but mention the Groom Pod when you place your order or put it in the coupon spot in the Evolution website and you'll receive $10 off your order. How cool is that?
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
Groomers, take your seats. School is about to begin.
All right, back to school this week, Barbara. Veterinary vocabulary is candida. Do you know what candida is, besides a song from the 70s?
It's yeast.
It is yeast. It is a genus of yeast that is the most common cause of fungal infections and usually skin or mucus related. So those are the two areas. But yeah, it's like thrush in babies and it's everywhere. We all have it. It's present on all of us, but it takes like a compromised immune system or something else going on for it to kind of get overpopulated and really cause a problem. So it's often a secondary symptom of something. Grooming glossary this week is the loin. Do you know where the loin is? I just like to say loin. Do you know where the loin is?
I know, but that's a, you know, like some words are so funny. Like golf.
Golf is a weird one.
I think golf is the strangest word. Whoever thought up this word, golf? It sounds like you got something stuck and you got to puke. Golf.
Do you have a favorite word?
Golf.
Is it? Mine is snood. It just makes me laugh. Snood. All right.
Okay. So anyway, so what were we talking about? The loin is... it's like above the flank.
It is, kind of. It's the area between the last ribs and the pelvis. Or on a human, it would be your waist. So it's the dog's waist. I didn't know that. Let's do the definition du jour. Barbara, tell us about irritations and allergic reactions.
Okay, so this came up because we were discussing what constitutes a hypoallergenic shampoo. Not all shampoo reactions are allergic reactions. Sometimes they're shampoo irritations or dermatitis. So what is the difference between dermatitis and an allergic reaction? The difference is that the allergic reaction takes some time to develop, some time and more than one exposure. So a shampoo irritation or a dermatitis is usually caused by a failure to thoroughly rinse the product or applying a detergent surfactant on a skin that has been clipped and kind of roughed up, which is another reason why we like to do the clipper work after the bath.
Good point.
Does that make sense to
you?
Sure
does.
Yeah, it's just another, there's so much rationale for doing more of the clipper work after the bath than before the bath. And this is the, because anytime you clip to the skin, and we're talking about like a 10 blade on the underbelly, there's a possibility that you're going to rough up the stratum corneum. And this makes a pathway for surfactant molecules to penetrate into the more alive part of the skin or the lower dermal layer and cause an irritation. So it's a good thing to always clip after you shampoo.
That's a great rule of thumb, absolutely, because we want to do the least amount of harm while we're doing our job. So make sure you're clipping a clean belly.
Of course, having a good blade, keeping your blade sharp, because it is dull blades that cause irritation more than sharp blades. Sharp blades, they may gouge skin more easily, but they don't rough it up and make a pathway for shampoo irritation like the dull blade that's actually pulling on the follicles. Does that make sense?
It doesn't. It is not. It's definitely not comfortable when it's not sharp and it's just tugging on the hair, especially on their belly. We don't want to do that. So it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Clean,
so
sharp equipment.
So contact dermatitis is usually very localized. An allergic reaction is often very generalized. So that's another way to tell. And there's another big difference. Contact irritation is usually closely occurs to the fact, you know, like you clip and then you see the redness. Oh, shit. I irritated. I did that on a little dog just the other day. I don't know, maybe. I couldn't tell whether she had a pre-existing red spot on her belly or whether I caused that. But I clipped and there it was. I put Gold Bond on it. She went home. I sent home a little dollar size Gold Bond with her and we were good. But allergic reaction can occur 2, 3, 4 days later. Because a sensitization involves the immune system having to develop antibodies in response to the offender
and go on attack. It's got to
So here I'm going to read this little paragraph. It's a little bit technical, but perhaps it will illuminate, or it will make it worse. Let's see.
And we should also say this is primarily talks about contact allergies. This isn't inhaled allergies or when you eat something and react immediately. That's a whole different class of allergies.
Yeah, this isn't like a peanut allergy.
Yeah, this is contact allergy or dermatitis.
Sensitization involves allergic reactions of the immune system. Sensitization is a three-step process with an initial exposure followed by an induction period that involves the development of antibodies or lymphocytes in response to an antigen. The induction period usually does not produce symptoms. The third step is called the challenge or elicitation reaction, which occurs on subsequent treatments or exposures. So the first time a dog is contacts something that it's allergic to, it has no reaction. It has to be the second or the 100th application, right?
Right.
And so all the time, so it has an application. There's also something called a threshold. Some substances which have the potential to sensitize or cause an allergic reaction can be used below a threshold level that does not cause a problem.
I have a neoprene contact allergy. I can wear a wetsuit for 2 hours. I can do 2 tank dives. If I leave that wetsuit on too much longer than that, I have learned over the years that repeated exposure causes me to break out in hives. It's horrible. It doesn't usually happen if I only dive once. But if I do repeated dives in a week and I've got hives and they last for a long time.
You've gone over the threshold level of your body for exposure to the neoprene.
Yep.
Yep. But there is a level at which you can stay under and won't have. So some of the things such as preservatives. Preservatives are one of the things that most common criminal of shampoos causing reactions, probably even more than fragrances, although fragrance allergy is very common. It's hard to name the known attackers, the known allergens, but some fragrance ingredients, and that includes essential oils.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So just because something is all natural doesn't mean that it's unlikely to cause an allergic reaction. Actually, it's more so because natural substances are much more complex. They're much more likely to cause a problem, although they're less likely to cause an irritation problem. But you know, it can develop a sensitivity problem.
Right. And this also completely different from getting a staph infection from grooming. It's all skin related stuff, but they all present a little bit differently. It's part of what we deal with. You know, it's why we have to keep our bathing systems clean and run acidic stuff through there so that no Pseudomonas aeruginosa grows. All kinds of reasons that we need to recognize, like the differences between a reaction versus an allergy.
The really important point is that an allergic reaction can happen later in the day, the next day, or down the line, depending on the body is building up its reaction, and then it takes time for it to react and cause the problem. So if a dog is allergic to your shampoo, it very well could happen somewhat removed from the grooming. Groomers tend to think that if the dog went out fine, and the same thing holds for bacterial infection. We as groomers tend to think that if the dog went out and he was fine, we're off the hook, right?
Right.
Our products are off the hook. But the truth is, if the customer calls 3 days later and says yesterday he started itching all over and he's rashy, and that's very much like an allergic reaction. It is not that he went out and rolled in the grass. I mean, it's you don't even need to get defensive about it. You just need to be open to the possibility that
yes,
the dog might have reacted to something that you have. Being open to the possibility doesn't mean that you're legally suable or something. You know, like, don't get all afraid. Just know that bacterial infection and allergic reactions can present well after the event,
well,
after the exposure. And basic dermatitis, basic shampoo irritations are most likely to show up shortly thereafter.
Well, thank you. That is good stuff. We're over the limits. So I'm going to say we're going to call this a show, and we will answer that Facebook question next week.
Okay. That's cool. The how to use moisturizers and all of that.
Yeah, I think it's a great subject.
You're going to be surprised at what I have to say.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
Tune in next week to hear it all here.
Same time, same station. Actually, you can listen anytime. That's the beauty of the podcast world. All right. Happy grooming, everybody. We'll see you next week from the Groom Pod. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Ta-ta, everybody. Bye now.
Take care of yourself. We care about you.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.